This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Later this hour, we're taking a tour of the Old South and Central Florida with the woman who literally wrote the book. We'll revisit a conversation we had with Erica Waters about her book, Discovering Old Florida. But first, while golf might seem like a sport that doesn't demand much of one's body, only people who've never played the game are likely to think that. Yes, you hit the ball only every few minutes and spend much of the time during the round sitting in your golf cart chatting with fellow players, waiting for the group in front of you to move along. But the golf swing is a powerful and explosive movement, especially with the longer clubs. At the top of the swing, golfers can exert 6.5 times their body weight or more of pressure on their spine. And over time, this can cause pain and even damage a golfer's body, eventually limiting how often a person can play or taking them off the course entirely. On today's show, we're going to explore the results of a new research study into ways golfers can minimize the effects a golf swing has on one's body. I'm joined in studio by Thor Parrish. He's a junior here at FGCU and the person behind the study. Thor, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Dr. Maria Colmer. She's an associate professor of rehabilitation sciences in the occupational therapy program here at FGCU. She worked with Thor on the study. Maria, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And also we're joined by Tara McKenna. She's the director of the PGA Golf Management Program here at FGCU. Tara, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Are you a golfer, maybe even an older golfer, who is starting to feel the game and time take its toll on your body? Or maybe you're just curious about this new study? Give us a call now. The number to join the show is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Just use the hashtag GCL. So, Thor, let's start with you. How did you get interested in doing this study?
Oddly enough, I actually met Dr. Colmer here at Women's Day at Miramar Golf Club.
Okay.
I worked there as an intern and was picking the range and decided I wanted to stop picking the range and help someone out with their golf swing. And I walked over and I was introduced to Dr. Colmer and gave her a few pointers. And we got to talking and she discussed her recent findings with one of her friends who was told not to swing as far in her golf swing and was playing just as good as a game of golf.
That was advice given to her by a instructor?
A chiropractor back in
Pennsylvania. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So were you a student at FGCU at the time?
I was, yeah. I was a sophomore.
And what is your major or what is your degree track?
Professional golf management with a minor in entrepreneurship.
So I was wondering, you are in the professional golf management program.
I am, yes.
So you're basically collecting data from golfers to see if shortening one's swing can be as effective. Is that kind of a simple way to put it?
You got it, yeah.
Now, historically speaking, as I understand it, a golf instructor will typically try to get you to take your club all the way back to parallel and try to get the most out of it. So this is kind of counterintuitive. What did you find or let's start with how did the study work? What were the mechanics of doing it?
The first thing that we did is I teamed up with a group of four other occupational graduate students who know the mechanics of the body far better than I did.
Right.
With their research and our teamwork, we analyzed a swing that's considered a full swing or where the club goes parallel to the ground. And we did the statistics and found that they're using 7.5 times their body weight of compression on their spine in a full swing. Then we had to figure out what is the body mechanics of a three-quarter swing or one that doesn't break parallel. And we're finding the compression load is 110 pounds less when you're using that shorter abbreviated swing. So as soon as we got the body mechanics down, it was more just finding the people to test the theory. And so I found that through PGM golf management students as well as Division I Florida Gulf Coast University golfers, men's and women's from our golf team.
What is the technology that allows you to collect this data? Do you put them in front of a computer? Do you have sensors on them? Describe that.
Yeah, we use two major technologies, TrackMan and K-Vest. So TrackMan is a device that measures everything that happens after we hit the golf ball and a little bit before. So club speed, ball speed, how far the ball goes, as much as how many times does that ball spin when it's in the air. The other technology we used was this item called a K-Vest. And the K-Vest is a vest that you wear, a belt, a device on your arm and wrist that measures the kinematic sequence in your golf swing. So basically what part of your body is moving when and how much of that part of your body is moving. And so that's how we analyzed spinal torque, or how much upper body and lower body separation we have in the golf swing.
So it's like a golf simulator, kind of like they're in a situation where they're hitting a real ball like into a screen, and all the data is being collected.
Exactly. So you can see the ball flight in a bright red line down the middle of a fairway, and you can also see an animated character of what the swing was, basically.
I know a hardcore golfer who has one of these in his garage.
Wow.
Do the big swings that most pros have tempt golfers to try to emulate that, and is this sort of swimming upstream with people's mindsets, do you think?
100%. Most definitely. I mean, you see the way that professional golfers are, they are truly athletes. Mm-hmm. And so the things that their body is capable and that they train themselves to do, they're able to get that full swing. We see them on TV. We create these expectations of what we want in our golf game. And we think, heck, if the pros are doing it, then we should be able to do it too. And it's just not true.
So to describe the findings, how much less effective, if at all, is this three-quarter swing?
So what we found is, after running a t-test interval through all of our data, that there was no significant distance loss in a three-quarter swing. We tested that. So statistically, it was insignificant, as well as when we asked golfers what would be a significant amount lost to, they said about 15 yards would be significant, and we were only losing about 4 to 5 yards. While at the same time with that three-quarter swing, we were gaining this thing called smash factor, or how efficiently we're using our golf club. Lots of different variables that come into smash factor, but there's a theoretical limit of 1.5. And when we used a full swing, we were at a 1.38 on average, and with a three-quarter swing, we were at a 1.42.
This smash factor term, is this new in the business? I've never heard of it before until now. Is this lingo is this jargon in the golf world, or is this data driven?
It's data driven. It's ball speed divided by club head speed. It's something that a launch monitor device
okay,
does deliver.
So, gotcha. So. Exactly. Okay. And I'll ask this all to all three of you, because I'm not sure who might know the answer. Over the years, golf clubs have gotten bigger. The heads have gotten bigger. The shafts have gotten longer. Is that making it harder on people's bodies or easier on people's bodies? Or do we even know the answer to that?
I would say that club components in general have evolved greatly in terms of just overall weight. If you look at the clubs of 10, 15 years ago, their overall weight was so much – their total weight was so much higher compared to now. I mean, there are maximums that are set by USGA and other governing bodies that max out the size of the club head, the length of the shaft, the coefficient of restitution, which is a spring effect, how the ball responds to the club face. So all those things have maxed out. The one thing they have not touched is actually the ball.
So theoretically then, I think you're probably saying that it's making it easier on people because there's less
– Yes.
There's less to carry or less to swing. It's lighter.
Yeah.
It's longer. It's, maximized with
more
technology.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I played high school golf at Fort Myers High. Shout out to Coach Sam. And he taught us to play with a compact swing. I mean, that was part of his teaching style, was to try to get you to think – don't try to take it back like John Daly at the time. Try to hit more of a knockdown shot if you can manage it. Is that common with golf instruction, or is that not really as common as you might think?
I think golf instruction has evolved a lot, especially with the Titleist Performance Institute, and golf professionals and medical professionals are being trained in more movement analysis. So what we're finding is the limitations have been identified, and the instruction has been adapted to any limitations that might be discovered through physical and visual assessment. And I think you look at someone like John Rahm, who's really big on tour right now. He's got a three-quarter swing, mostly due to issue that developed when he was growing up playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
But he pounds the ball. He absolutely just kills it. And it's three-quarter swing.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very efficient. So I think if you were to look, you ask anybody if they were what was their best swing. It wasn't the one that they went all the way back like in a John Daly-esque type golf swing.
Right.
It was the one that was the more compact.
Who were the you'd said – talk about the different people who you conducted this study on. Were they – what ages were they?
They were all older than 18 years old. They were had to meet a criteria of a 13 or less handicap.
Okay.
And they had to have no previous back injuries before. That was our criteria for our population.
Have you tested it on people who are older?
Now, just personally myself, I have tested it with my grandpa, actually, who's locally here in the area. We have done lessons together, and I've talked about the benefits that it could bring to his golf game. And it took a little while for him to get used to, but the main difference I'm seeing is the amount of golf that he's actually able to play now with this three-quarter swing. The fact that he's not trying to strive for every yard and hit it as hard as possible and letting the club do the work mostly, he's increased his rounds from once or twice a week to 3 to 4 times a week.
Now, this talks about distance, power. What about accuracy? Does this inform accuracy at all?
Yeah, it definitely does. We have all the data there that it's showing we are getting more consistent of hitting it towards the center of the not only the club face but also the fairway as well.
We're talking about a new research study at FGCU that's collecting and analyzing data on golf swings to figure out the sweet spot between swing effort and swing results in hopes of helping older golfers play the game longer, or anyone really. My guests are Thor Parrish, he's an FGCU student who conducted the study, Dr. Maria Kalmer, Associate Professor of Rehabilitation Sciences, and Tara McKenna, Director of the PGA Golf Management Program here at FGCU, which we'll learn more about later. If you'd like to join our discussion with a question or a comment, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter. Use the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Maria Kalmer, let's pivot to you. Where do you fit into this study? Besides, you know, you met him and here we are, but fill in the middle ground.
Absolutely. As an occupational therapist, our practice framework deals with leisurely activities. And we have to return an individual back to his occupations. So coming to Florida Gulf Coast University, as a collegiate athlete myself, I played sports, very competitive.
What sports?
I've played basketball and softball in college.
Okay.
Coming to Florida, I started playing golf. And, so I'm actually combining my two loves, my career of occupational therapy with my love for golf. So as far as with my research as an occupational therapist here at Florida Gulf Coast, we have to identify faculty-driven research projects. So the faculty actually establish what research they want to do, and then we ask our students, which research would you like to fall into? So 4 of the students wanted to do golf. So I figured, I enjoy golf. I have to choose a topic as an occupational therapist, so why not combine the two? So that's what I did.
So people think of occupational therapy. I'm not sure they think of sports when they think of occupational therapy. But you know, for people who are occupational therapists and who are studying to become occupational therapists, is the sporting world, is the fitness world all part of that curriculum and that mindset?
Absolutely. As an occupational therapist, when we do an evaluation, we look at their occupational profile and we identify their activities of daily living and their IADLs. Leisurely activities fall into IADLs. So we
What's
ask
IADL stand for?
Is instrumental activities of daily living, medication management.
Like golf might be for some people.
Exactly. So leisure activities fall into the IADLs. So if a client identifies that they want to return to golf, and they can't golf right now because they just had a back injury or they just had a hip surgery or a knee replacement or whatnot, and they can't bend over anymore. So we, as an occupational therapist, we work with those clients and we provide them with adaptive equipment so that they don't have to bend over anymore to tee up a golf ball, to mark a ball on a green, or to retrieve a ball from a hole.
What are the kinds of I recently spent some time with my dad who was going through some health issues, and he was working with an occupational therapist, and they'd give him little exercises to do that were pointed in certain directions. What are the kinds of things that a person who wants to get back on the golf course, what would an occupational therapist try to suggest to them to do?
From an exercise standpoint or occupational therapists, we deal with occupations. So ADLs, the activities of daily living, dressing, bathing, and grooming.
Right.
Depending upon what their occupations are, we'll actually work in that area. For example, we'll actually have the client using the adaptive equipment in the clinic, teaching them how to tee up a golf ball with the adaptive equipment.
Oh, okay.
Teaching them how to retrieve a ball from the hole. So we do functional activities to get them back on the golf course, to get them back into productive living, to make their life to the fullest, to live life to the fullest.
You know, golf can be a real key ingredient to a person's life, especially a retired person's life, not just because it's fun and they've grown up or lived their life playing it, but the people they play with, the culture that's around it. Can research or will research like this inform future occupational therapists as they work with golfers? I mean, is that kind of how this all works? You know, you start with an idea, you do research, it works its way into curriculum, and then it works its way out into the world. Is that the hope?
Absolutely. What's actually happening already, Thor and I just returned from our National Occupational Therapy Conference in Utah, and we actually presented our golf research out there. So that was kind of cool, and we're getting ready to publish our articles in occupational therapy journals and practice as well, so that the occupational therapists out there know, you know, what to do with the clients that are golfers.
When did this get started? When did you guys have that conversation? About a year and a half ago?
That was in October, November, was it? November, definitely.
November, yeah,
November of 2016.
Yes.
So in October of 2016.
Yeah.
No, November, September. September, the month before. Anyway, before you had that conversation, would you have thought that you would be attending an occupational therapy conference in Utah about you know, ways to help people play golf longer?
No, I definitely have not. It has been such a fun trip, travel, experience in these last 2 years, for sure.
What is your career track? What is your hope? Where are you heading with all of this?
I hope to be a leader in the golf fitness industry. I love teaching. I've been actually a CrossFit instructor for the last 3 years. I have been working as a golf instructor for the last two. I'm heading out of the country to go instruct golf this summer. And I want to pursue and help people develop not only their golf game in a perspective of that they're getting better, but also the longevity of it as well. So incorporating the fitness and the healthy lifestyle together.
You know, it's interesting how golf has evolved over the years to I don't think you really thought of fitness necessarily back during like the Lee Trevino years. But then Tiger came along and sort of started changing that. And now, like you said, I mean, we're seeing high-end athletes out there on the golf course in a way that is really remarkable. And I guess that's what brought you in, and that's where you're going.
Exactly.
All right. We're talking about the golf swing on today's show through the lens of new research coming out of FGCU that seeks to find ways for older golfers and any golfer to play longer into life. If you want to join our conversation with a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So let's pivot now to you.
Okay.
Sorry, we've been sitting here. You've been watching the conversation. This is Tara McKenna. She's director of FGCU's PGA Golf Management Program. It's one of just a handful in the country. Describe this program to us, because I wasn't familiar with it until we chatted on the phone yesterday.
Sure. We're a PGA-accredited four-year institution. There are only 18 in the country that do what we do, and our program produces future PGA of America members, but they also are awarded a bachelor's degree. We have a national prominence. I mean, we compete with probably five of those 18 schools directly up and down the East Coast and Midwest. Our students come from all over. We have about 40% out-of-state enrollment. Our students go on 16 months of internship, and Thor mentioned he's going out of the country. He's actually going to Vietnam for an internship.
Wow.
Which is pretty special. We have another student who's currently in New Zealand on they're all paid internships. They do 16 months. When they graduate, we have nearly 100% job placement. And we're producing, you know, future leaders in the golf industry who are growing the game, teaching the game, running facilities. They could do a myriad of jobs and different placements, not just a traditional green grass golf professional.
How long has this program been around? And how long have these programs been around in general? Is this something that's been around for a while that is just under the radar for people who don't pay attention to the golf world?
Yeah, it was under the radar before I got in the business and became a PGA member. I didn't know about it. They've been around since 1975, but not necessarily an official curriculum was directed towards these universities. We have – a lot of them came around in 2005. We started – we've been here since 2005. I've been here since 2010. And they've grown, but it's a boutique kind of degree because you do have to have a 12 or less handicap to get into the program and pass the PGA playing ability test to get out.
How did you wind up doing this?
That's a great question. I was a traditional head golf professional in Central Mass before I got the job. And PGA of America has a job search engine that members can utilize to find different career paths, and happened to just come across my email, and I applied and interviewed and packed a pod and moved down here.
Did you see this as a future at any point, or was it kind of like a, hey, yeah, head fake, here we go?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah, I took the job. It was the dean called me. I was at a drive-thru and said, yeah, sure, I'll move to Florida. Why not? And 4 months, you know, four weeks later, here I am. No, I had no idea. I knew I wanted to do something maybe a little bit different. I'd been a traditional green grass professional for almost 20 years, and this just provided just another avenue to really tap into my passion for education, for golf, and still stay directly connected to the industry.
What are the students like? I mean, give us a breakdown of, is it, you know, mostly guys, mostly girls, about halfway? What are your students like? Are there any non-traditional students, meaning, you know, older students?
I am about to graduate a retired naval commander in April who already has 2 degrees. So we really attract a diverse population, definitely 92% male, but the industry itself, the PGA of America Association, I'm probably, well, I call myself the 2%er. There's 2% women in the PGA of America.
Oh, really? It's that small?
It's that small. It's about just under 1,000 members. And we also get a lot of out-of-state. I get a lot of transfers, people who might have played college golf, did something for a year or so in school and said, really, this is what my career path, this is really what I want to do. And they'll transfer into our program. And you start as a true first-year student in our program, and it takes 4 years to complete.
What kind of classes do they take? Is this a business – is this part of the business school, or where does it fit into the FGCU's, you know, hierarchy?
Yes, we are part of the Luckert College of Business. We're in the School of Resort and Hospitality Management. Our students take a diverse number of classes. You figure a golf professional wears a lot of hats.
Mm-hmm.
And from turf grass to merchandising, facility operations, executive management, we do business planning, tournament operations. There's marketing, accounting. I'm trying to think. I'm just changing the curriculum. So it's quite a range. And we try to encourage our students to minor and double major in complementary degrees, like Thor is doing entrepreneurship, which is a really nice marriage with our degree that we try to promote.
Do students get to play any golf academically, or is playing golf on their own time?
Believe it or not, it's required for the degree.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound so bad.
You come to school, we're making you play golf. Go figure. Not a bad way for some freshmen to come into school. We have a tournament program that our student association, of which Thor is now the vice president. He's an overachiever, as you can tell. We have a pretty good tournament program, and we play at a lot of facilities. In fact, if you were to go to any of the 140 golf facilities here in Southwest Florida, about 75% of them have employed one of our interns or have one of our graduates.
Hmm. The golf team, FGC has a golf team, right? I know it's a silly question. I
Division
work on
one.
Campus.
Yep.
I should know. Is there any overlap or interfacing between what you guys are doing and what they're doing?
Believe it or not, there's not really a natural synergy mm-hmm. with those two, with the two programs, really because there's a lot of balls juggled in the air. To really be a D1 athlete and to do the degree and the internship and the professional networking that's required of our program, you can do it. I've had two women be successful in completing both. I've had no male students attempt it. And really it's because they probably couldn't make the team necessarily or maybe mm-hmm. meet coaches' standards. I do have probably about a half a dozen students who could definitely play at that level, but they're choosing the professional route versus the playing route.
Is the kind of research that he's conducting something that could wind its way into your curriculum?
Absolutely. Well, he's using all of our technology. If
right.
you come down to the Swing Lab, it's really just we have such a wealth of data gathering instruments, and it's just a natural synergy for us to really reach out across campus. We could do stuff with engineering. We could do stuff with education. We could do stuff with occupational therapy, and we like to really do that in a very cooperative manner. So From a golf instruction standpoint, I mean, Thor's certified in K-Vest, and we're going to spend a lot more time with the TrackMan and the K-Vest. It takes a lot of time to really be adept at navigating those technologies, and we're going to spend even more time in the classroom with that.
How do students get into the program?
They probably go to pga.org and find out, or their pro tells them, or their guidance counselor might tell them. I do college golf seminars and present the benefits of the program, and we get I get a lot of inquiries. I get about 200 applicants a year.
And how many get in?
Probably about half get in, and then about maybe half of those actually wind up attending.
And you said you have almost 100% success rate as far as placing people after college.
I would say about 99% in terms of full-time job placement. I have a handful that might go on to pursue a graduate degree or maybe not go in the golf industry, but yes.
I would think that would be pretty high in terms of today's job place.
Between us
outlook.
And hospitality management, for sure. I mean, we're probably one of the few degrees that can boast that high percentage, for sure.
Where is the golf world going in terms of popularity? Do you have any sense of, you know, is it gaining popularity? Is it losing popularity? Where are we at with the golf world in general?
Well, since the economic downturn, there's been a growth of almost 22%. In playing. The number of facilities still has remained flat in terms of growth. I think that when they overbuilt back in the mid-2000s, that's leveling off where it should be based on participation. But if you were to look right now, there is a surge of, we'll say, non-traditional golf, the Top Golfs of the world. I mean, that business is booming. And when they build a Top Golf, it's paid for
in a year. That's the one with like the layer, the levels and the
– It's the driving range on steroids, yes.
Yeah. It's the driving range meets amusement park.
Yes. Rumor has it they're building one in Fort Myers. Shovels in the ground, that's not going to be confirmed.
I've heard that rumor as well.
Yes.
We're learning about FGCU's PGA Golf Management Program during this part of the program. I'm joined in studio by Tara McKenna. She's director of that program. It's one of just 18 in the country. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, we still have a few minutes left, so give us a call. The number is 877-428-8255. So are programs like yours how most people are winding up in the golf business these days? Or since there's only 18, are there still a lot of people who wind up as a pro or a teaching pro or whatever who just never even take a class?
Well, there's two ways you can gain your PGA membership. One is through a university program. The other one is through what's called the PGA Associate Program. And right now, universities are producing about half the new members that come into the association. So we're producing 50% of the golf professionals that are in the country.
Thor, what's next for you? Do you have more research lined up, or what's your hope for the future?
We recently, actually just last Saturday, conducted another research study. We hosted with a second group of occupational therapy graduate students, hosted a health and wellness fair for a group of 36 participants to come in, learn more about proper nutrition, proper exercise, proper body mechanics, adaptive equipment, as well as got to go upstairs in our swing lab. And I myself had them hit a couple golf balls. Took them and we did dynamic and static stretches and had them hit more golf balls. And so right now I'm looking at the data that I've collected from everyone to see if there's a benefit of doing static versus dynamic stretches before you play golf.
You're like a scientist who looks at golf.
You could say that, yeah.
And I understand that this other research that we started talking about with the shortened swing, you've won some awards and gotten some accolades for that.
Can I get you to talk about that? Yeah, our team has done a phenomenal job with our posters and our presentations. We won the Florida Occupational Therapy Conference in Orlando, which then we gained attraction to the Utah Conference, which is the national conference where over 1,000 posters were presented. So we were allowed to go there and present. And myself did an oral presentation here on campus and won first place university-wide.
How is this research being received by the golfers who hear about it? Do golfers think, I still want to swing hard and big? Or do people open their minds to this as something that maybe they would put into practice?
Definitely when you're introducing it to the more novice golfers, they seem very susceptible to the idea of implementing it into their play.
Right.
The golfers, my friends, the PGM programs are the top 2% of the golfers in the world. So their concept of how hard they can swing and their limitations, they haven't perceived it quite yet. But especially when you bring it up to my grandpa and his friends, they seem very interested in the idea.
So in just a couple minutes we have left, we're going to When was the last time you played golf, Maria?
I played April the 11th at a golf outing, the Military Officers Association golf outing.
And where was that?
It was at Shell Point here in Florida that I chaired.
How'd you do?
We did great. We were 6 under. Actually, golf with the president of the university, President Martin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and our vice president.
We know President Martin on this show, yeah.
Dr. Cordova, yeah. Yes, it was great. We were 6 under, so we were right in the middle of the mix. It was great. It was a full 144 participants.
And you're relatively new to the game, so what's your handicap at this point?
Currently it's a 26.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
Hey,
it's better than average.
Oh yeah, there's no fast track to the single digits. That's for sure.
I've only been playing since 2011.
And when was the last time you played, Thor? How often do you get to play?
I played April 27th. We had a PGM tournament at Gulf Harbor. It was an individual Stableford. I had not an impressive front nine, but I enjoyed the back nine a lot more. The reason being, I lost 4 balls in the front nine and only brought 5 balls with me. So I was a little nervous.
I ran out of golf balls during a high school golf tournament once. So
been
there. Yeah, yeah. They put ROB on the leaderboard. What's your handicap?
I hold about a 4 or 5.
Oh, solid. And how about you, Tara?
I played I'm on the Scramble Golf Tour, so I get a lot of requests to play in the Scramble charity events, and I played recently with President Martin on Sunday.
And what's your handicap?
4 point something.
Oh, nice.
Something like that.
And favorite course in Southwest Florida?
Calusa Pines.
Quill Creek Country Club.
Heritage Palms. Golf and Country Club.
Oh, I know Heritage Palms.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts? We only have a few seconds left, but Maria, before we go?
No, like I said, we're hoping to conduct a follow-up workshop this fall here at FGCU. Whenever we ran the other day, we were getting flooded with emails and telephone calls wanting to participate in our research study. So in the fall, when Thor returns back from Vietnam, we hope to have a large
expo. Yeah.
Yeah, expo.
Thor, you ever been to Vietnam or any place like it?
No, never been to Asia before.
Wow. So this will be exciting.
I'm very excited.
Cool. And any final thoughts, Tara?
Hey, we're out to grow the game of golf, and their research is going to do that and hopefully extend the longevity of those who enjoy golf here down in Southwest Florida.
Oh, that's great. Well, that is all the time we have for this part of today's show. I want to thank my guest. Thor Parrish is a junior at FGCU and the person behind the study titled, it's a long title, Golf Swing Analysis for Discussion and Education Relating to Occupational Performance. Thor, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks also to Dr. Maria Colmer. She's an associate professor of rehabilitation sciences. Dr. Colmer, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
And thanks also to Tara McKenna. She's director of the PGA Golf Management Program at FGCU. Tara, it's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll have an encore presentation of an interview we did a while back on this show about the ultimate guidebook to historic South and Central Florida. I'm Mike Canary. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.